Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. So if you've ever found yourself wondering, where are all the emotionally available adults who know what they want, this episode is for you.
Today, we're sitting down with Daphne Poyser, the founder of Fern Connections, a matchmaking and dating coaching service rooted in values like authenticity, inclusivity, and human connection. Daphne works with people of all genders and orientations who are tired of swiping, ghosting, and playing games, and who are ready to date with intention.
So we are talking about how to show up as your full self and why so many of us keep making the same mistakes in love. Daphne brings a compassionate and realistic lens to modern dating. She cuts through the noise of the apps, outdated advice, and societal expectations.
Whether you're newly sober, reevaluating your relationship with alcohol, or just want deeper, healthier connections, Daphne is here to help you find love that actually fits your life. So Daphne, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. You know what? I love this topic of sobriety. And so when I seen that come through, that made me really, really happy. So I just want to say that thank you for the invite. And I love the conversation about sobriety and dating and relationships.
Wonderful. We're really happy to have you here. So let's start off with, what inspired you to establish Fern Connections as an LGBTQIA+, an ally-inclusive matchmaking service?
Let me take you back to 2019. In 2019, I became a widow. It's not a secret. So after a long battle of cancer, I became a widow. And I also decided, okay, what do I want to do with my life? I wanted something where I could have joy and happiness. And I didn't see that in corporate America. So I went on a vacation in 2019 with my kids and for Christmas. I think it was like 2 weeks. And when I came back to the office, I said, I can't do this anymore. So in January of 2020, I resigned from corporate America. And I spent some time, you know, the next few months trying to figure out what do I want to do, right? I didn't know there was going to be a pandemic. None of us knew that. To make a long story short, my late husband and I had ended our marriage years before, right? I was his caretaker, but we weren't really in a relationship, so to speak. We were separate, but together, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know, it's been a while. Let me try to find, you know, myself, someone that I could love and be happy with. And so I hired a matchmaker. And then the pandemic hit, right? And nothing happened with the matchmaker. Let me tell you, I think I went on one date in the whole year and that was it. And then I thought, you know, since I don't have anything to do in life, you know, let me see what's going on, you know, in the world. So I started listening to these LinkedIn Lives, and this person was on, and he was bringing on modern day matchmakers. And I thought, wow, this is so interesting. You know, I can take all of my skills from corporate America and transfer them to this business, and I can have my own business. So that's kind of how it started. Now, the reason why I do LGBTQ plus and ally inclusive is because My daughter is queer. A couple of my nieces, my nephew is gay, right? So it's like a long history of people. And so I thought, you know, why not? Why not celebrate the people that I love the most, right? And I'll be honest with you, no one was doing it. Some people do same sex, and that's probably as far as they go, but they don't include trans, non-binary, you know, gender non-conforming people. And so that's why I thought this is something that it was a little heartbreaking for me. But it was also eye-opening. And I thought, why not? It's going to be tough, I know. But why not, you know, take this on for all the people who are, you know, getting passed over, right? And it's been a challenge, but it's also been extremely rewarding for us.
How do you ensure inclusivity for clients just across diverse gender identities and sexual orientations?
You know, it's we talk about it. I think that's the biggest thing. I get comments from other people, matchmakers, whomever, say, oh, you're so bold, right? You ask for what you want. So if I'm looking for trans people who date trans people, I ask for them, right? If I'm looking for people of color, I ask for them. And so I think that's the biggest thing to be inclusive is that the people that I'm working with and the people that I want to work with, they know that we're inclusive because we talk about it. We say it out loud. We're really very much dedicated to the community of people that we serve. And we want them to know that, right? And we're out and about with, you know, queer people all the time. You know, it's what we do every day. It's my life I've had for a long time. So I think that's it, is that we show up and we show up loudly. And that makes a difference in most cases.
I love that. And I wanted to ask about, obviously, this is Sisters in Sobriety. And so I want to shift the conversation a little bit to sober dating. When you're setting up a profile or I guess, I don't know what you would call them, for each individual who you're doing matchmaking for, I'm assuming that you would ask if they're sober or sober curious. And whether or not that's something that they should disclose on a first date?
You know, we ask tons of, you know, intimate questions, right? And I always want to know if there's something unique about this person, right, that the other daters should know. And yes, we do create dating profiles for our clients. And one of those topics is about sobriety. Yeah. And so I'm a big proponent of it. I'm not a big drinker myself. And I just think that when you don't drink, especially on a first date, when you don't drink alcohol, that it keeps you clear. It keeps your, you know, you have clarity. You can be yourself, you know, and I don't think that people need to drink to be themselves. And I think that we've seen the shift, especially in the last couple of years, you know, with the sober dating apps and with the sober dating groups. And I love that because I think that you should just show up as yourself. And that's one of our claim to fames is that you show up as yourself, who you are as you are. And then people should like you and love you and accept you that way. And so if you have to numb yourself to some degree or any degree to be on a date or to be out with someone, then that's probably not someone you need to be on a date with. Or maybe you need to go back to, you know, why am I doing this? Right.
Right.
And focus on that instead of, you know, not showing up as your full self.
So someone would potentially know before going on a first date, like if that person is sober or sober curious, I'm assuming. It's funny. I just have an aside. When I was looking for the word about dating profile, I actually wanted to say, Sonia's going to laugh at this.
Biodata.
I can't say that though, because Sonia and I, we watched this together, didn't we? The Indian Matchmaker?
No, we watched it separately.
I watched all, I think there was three seasons. I watched all three seasons, right?
It was
a big thing back in the day.
I wanted Sonia to go on it. Like, I was serious. I was going to be writing like a whole thing for her to go on that show.
As an Indian person, I don't think it makes Indian people look very good. It makes them look like judgy, like obsessed with education and looks, and it is rough.
Sorry, that was an aside, but
yeah, the only thing I do like about her is the 80-20 thing where she's like, you will get 80% of what you want. But Daphne, so for someone like me, I had never been on a date sober until I got divorced and I was like 43. So how do you coach your clients to build connection, intimacy without relying on alcohol as a social lubricant? Or do you run into that issue?
I think what's happening today, it's happening naturally. People are choosing healthier ways of living, right? It's good for their mental health. It's good for their physical health, their emotional state. And so I think a lot of people are choosing naturally to just not drink or to drink lightly. And so one of the things that I, part of the questions that we ask is that, would you date someone who's sober, right? It is a big, because it's a real thing. And my daughter is sober and my daughter works with me, Maxwell. So for me, it's, you know, front and center all the time. So I always ask that question and I hear people say no. So before you even get to the date, I wouldn't put any of my clients on a date with someone who they didn't agree with, if it's HIV, you know, positive, or if it's someone who has mental health issues or someone who's, you know, sober, right? So the key for us and the key for me is to put my daters and my clients in the best possible image or whatever that is, you know, so that they can date, right? So I'm not going to put them in a place where, or I'm not going to put them on a date with someone who doesn't agree with their lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the big things for me is that no matter what it is, I want my clients to be safe. I want them to feel that they can be their authentic selves when they're on dates. And so I would never put a client who is sober on a date with someone who doesn't agree with that lifestyle.
Right. Well, that makes sense. And that's good to know for sure. How do you think sober daters can handle pressure or assumptions from potential partners who drink? It sounds like they just, under your matchmaking service, they just wouldn't even match because they just wouldn't. But let's say it's not through your matchmaking service.
Or it slips through the cracks, what happened to me. I never went on a date without telling somebody I was sober, but still, do you remember that one guy I started dating? He knew, he was fine with it. He didn't drink for the first few months. And then ended up being a pretty heavy drinker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So some people can slip through.
They definitely can. So how do you think that sober daters can handle that pressure or assumptions?
Well, I think it just depends on who you are and what state of your sobriety you're in, because some people will say, I'm sober, but I can date someone who drinks, right? Or someone who drinks lightly. And so it really just depends, but you really don't know until you get into that situation or that scenario with someone. And you're right. People, a lot of times, they say what you want to hear, right?
Right.
So they may say, I don't drink a lot. And then down the road, you realize this person is a heavy drinker. And there's not much you can do about that. But for the most part, you know, we haven't had that issue. I had an issue with something else that was quite interesting, that a client was sharing information that they never shared with me to another client on a date. And it came back to me, of course. And I thought, wow, that's crazy. But so that can happen. But I always say that try to enjoy your first, if it's a first date, try to enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
Have fun, you know, smile and do whatever. Unless the person is really out of line, right? And then you get up and you leave. But as far as, you know, how do you navigate a situation that may be a little tougher for you? I would say anytime that if you're not comfortable, you should get up and leave, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. This saying that I'm okay when people walk away from me. I want them to walk away.
Yeah.
So if you feel like you need to walk away from someone because the scenario or the date or the situation is not going well, then that's what you should do. Because it's really about, for me, I like the thought of being selfish, right? And people will like scream at me, but it's okay. I think you have to be a selfish dater. I think you have to put yourself first. And I think that you can't always be concerned about the other person.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm feeling uncomfortable, then I should get up and leave, right? I shouldn't have to tolerate someone else's behaviors just because, you know, I'm trying to be kind and I'm trying to be polite. There's no need for that. The way I see dates and dating is like, you don't really know these people, right?
Yeah.
You're just getting to know them. So why are you so concerned about how they feel, right? It takes more than one or two dates to be that concerned, in my opinion. It takes more than one or two dates to be that concerned about another person. You want to be kind. You want to be thoughtful. All the things that we are asked to do as humans, right? But at the same time, you don't owe these people anything. And so to me, it's better for you to be selfish in the sense that I need to make sure I feel good, you know, and when I walk away from this, I'm walking away because it makes sense for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that we don't do that enough.
No.
Let me say this, because I do work with straight people sometimes, especially women. I love working with women, especially those over 30. A lot of times we as women think that we have to be the good guys, right? We have to be the ones who, you know, who are called to save the world and all the crazy men out there that, you know, that want to date us, right? And we don't have to like be kind all the time. We don't have to be the good guys. We can walk away. We can say, this is not working for me. You know, you're a jerk, whatever that is. And it's okay. And so that's the thing that I when I'm coaching people, I talk about this, right? I really do believe in this concept of selfish dating, because women, I mean, we're normally the caregivers, we're normally the nurturers, we're normally the ones who are the peacekeepers. And we just think it's our role, our obligation. And I don't think that's the case. I think that we should, you know, be okay with, this is not working for me, and I'm not going to, you know, put up with this. I'm not going to tolerate this. And I just want to say that, because I don't know, for me being a woman, I literally became single again when I was 55, right? And so I just thought, you know what, this is not working for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here on a date with someone I don't care for. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm wondering if people use you, their matchmaker, as a therapist, which I think if I had a matchmaker, I kind of would. So how do you help people identify and overcome what you see as some barriers to forming connections?
You know, because I am a certified date and relationship coach, right? So I spend a lot of time like with date preparation. Let's talk about what makes sense in dating, right? Because if you think about it this way, if you dated someone for 10 years or you were in a relationship for 30 years or 25 years, you come out of that relationship and you want to date. Well, first of all, you're not the same person you were 25 mm-hmm. years ago. You've grown, you've changed in positive ways, I'm sure, and you want something different. And a lot of people don't understand what that looks like and what that means. So I'm helping people to understand that you're a different person today. And the things that you may have put up with when you were 25 or 20, you no longer have to do that. So now you can show up as your authentic self, your real self, and choose the people that you want to date today, that you want to be in relationship with going forward. And I'm almost sure, just based on the business, is that those people are not the same people, right? Uh-huh. And I know for sure that it's not the same person for me, right? The person I chose at 23 was nothing like the person I'm in a relationship with today, right? And so that's kind of where we start, is like with who you are now versus who you used to be. And then let's talk about the qualities of a person that you're looking for, right? Someone who can compliment you in a way to where they support you, they're there for you, they're allowing you to be your independent self. And those things are very important today. And it doesn't matter how old people are, they could be 25 or 35, right? But I can guarantee you that as we grow into ourselves, that we change so quickly and so rapidly that at any given time, we could do things differently. And we could choose different people because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm a couples therapist. And so I see couples at all stages of the relationship, but I also see that, that many people just don't really intentionally do emotional prep work before they get into relationships. What kind of emotional prep work do you recommend before diving into dating?
You know, one of the things that we do as part of our process for daters is that before people go on dates, I mean, I do a lot of date coaching, right? To make sure people can communicate effectively, to make sure they show up in looking their best selves and being their best selves. But one of the things that we do for people before they go on dates, we have them do what we call pre-journaling. And what that pre-journaling means is that they think about how this date should go, kind of a manifestation on this is how I'm expecting this date to go, right? And then they write all this stuff down before the date. And then after the date, we ask them to do post-journaling, right? How did the date go? Like, what did you learn? You know, what were some of the lessons learned? What were some of the great things, you know, the not so great things, so that we can talk about how do we improve on your dating, right? Yeah. Because a lot of times, we always want it to be the other guy, right? It's always somebody else, it's never us. But by doing this pre-journaling, it kind of gives you this mindset of like, I'm in control of how this goes, right? And even if it doesn't go exactly the way I wanted it to, I've learned some things from this. So I could take that into the rest of my dating journey.
Okay. I love that you do that. I think that's great to like put the intention out there I love the manifestation piece, obviously, but it's also kind of focusing, okay, where am I? And then the post-date journaling, I love that.
Yeah, but it's interesting that I feel like what you're always told for dating is like, don't have any expectations. But what's interesting is to be able to write down your expectations and then when they're not met, be like, you know what, then this maybe is not the person, or these are the reasons that maybe I wouldn't go out on another date with that person. But I kind of like it in a way, because having no expectations, like, it's so hard to do, right?
I'm a big believer of, you know, people say love should be unconditional, and we'll say it shouldn't. It should be conditional. I expect you to show up, you know, meeting the conditions that I want for my love life and for my life in general, right? So I think the same way is that you have to have expectations. What I don't think you have to have is these long lists, right, of, you know, requirements or needs or qualities. Yeah, are fine. But it's like, you don't have to have a 25, you know, deep list of these are the things I'm looking for. And I think those things get crossed between expectations with dating and relationships and this long list, right? And I do think you have to have expectations. Like, I do think you have to have conditions when it comes to relationships. And I'm a very spiritual person. I'll say that. I'm not a religious person. So when I hear people say, oh, you know, love should be unconditional, the first thing I say is like, oh my God, right? It's like, no, you have to have conditions. My condition is that you will treat me the way I want to be treated. You will show up in a very kind, positive way, right? So there's all these conditions that people don't think about, but you should have. And one of the other things that I believe in too, you know, is relationship contracts. I believe that it doesn't have to be like so serious that you got to bring your attorney into it, but I do think that you should have expectations of what you want from this relationship, and you should write that down. You know, it's like journaling. When you write things down, the thought of putting it on paper makes it more real, right? And then you have something to, you know, come back to, that we agreed that you would take the trash out every Tuesday, right? Whenever that is. And some things are bigger than other things, but I think it's okay to like document that so that there is this understanding in the relationship and these expectations in the relationship and that you agree to. And there's really nothing wrong with that. It could be unsaid, but sometimes people need it documented on paper or on their phones or whatever that is, so that you can, you know, go back to it and say, you did agree to do this. You know, we decided we were going to have children after 5 years or whatever that is.
I really think it's interesting, the piece about unconditional. I don't know where this came from, where we have been taught this, but
Parents supposed to have unconditional love for their
parents,
children?
Yes. To children, it's different, but adults. Oh. So I sit in front of my clients and I'm like, you know, adult love is not unconditional. It's conditional. Yeah. And the looks on their faces, like I've just said something blasphemous. Like, what? And it's like, no, it's not unconditional. Really? You're going to stay if your partner treats you like this? Like, no. And I actually, when I work with couples, I actually ask, what is your bottom line? Because we need to have, like, we do. We have them. We should, at least. I mean, and so I love that you've just called that out, because it's something that people don't think about. They just think, oh, well, if we're married, it's unconditional and it's till death do us part. And I'm not pooping on that. I'm just saying we all are going to have our limits.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I do think it goes back to what Tanya said, is that it's our parents, right? You know, I was doing a live show on Instagram not too long ago. I think it was in February. And someone asked me, like, if my parents, you know, are happily married, will I be happily married, or will I be, you know, have a great relationship? And I said, the thing about parents, right, we're really good at hiding things, at masking things, you know, especially from our children. So I said, you have to make sure that what you consider your parents to be happily married, that really is the case. I said, because if you pay close attention sometimes, you'll realize that one parent asked a question and the other parent never answered the question. They just skipped over it, right? Or they never kiss in public, or when they're together, or they don't hold hands, or they don't have dinner together. So what you see as a perfect relationship in your parents, it's really probably some turmoil behind the scenes. And just because we're conditioned from our, you know, upbringing that we should like just put up with these marriages is not the worst thing ever. So I'm just going to stay in this relationship until death do us part, right? And that is like, to me, the worst example of, you know, how a relationship should be for your children and for the people around you, because they grow up thinking my parents had this perfect relationship when in actuality they didn't, because they didn't argue in front of you, which they shouldn't. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but there were signs. And I always say to people, pay close attention to people, watch their behaviors, because they're not holding hands. You know, my partner comes home every day from work. He gives me a kiss first thing, right? And so it's like, if they're not doing those things and they can't do those things in front of you, it's probably not all what you think it is, right? And so, yeah, so I think that to me, it takes us back to my parents were divorced when I was young. They kind of hated each other. So I knew how they felt about each other, but at least they were being honest about it, right? And not hiding it. I, on the other hand, for my marriage of 32 years, hid a lot, right? And mask a lot. And which is one of the reasons why I wanted to be a dating and relationship coach, because I want to help people to understand that just because it looks great on the outside doesn't mean it's great on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not even, you know, my parents' marriage didn't look great on the outside or the inside, but it was like, you stay married no matter what. And that was for sure the feeling I had in my own marriage. Yeah. I was like, this is not nearly as bad as my parents. Of course I'm going to stay married. Yeah. But so we all know those people. I don't think Kathleen and I are these people that have the like really rigid checklist that's like a scroll. So how do you work with people, or what advice do you give people who have that extensive checklist or unrealistic, or would you ever even say those are unrealistic expectations for a potential partner?
I do, because I think you have to be realistic in order to find the right person, right? I mean, our jobs is to match people based on compatibility and other things. And if you have this long, ridiculous list of expectations or qualities that you want from someone that no one can meet, and I'll tell you where I start. And I did this when I first started dating. I had this huge list, right? And I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago, you know, everybody was talking about the list, right? The list was long and then it got shorter. Like you only need 5 things, whatever that is, right? But what I started with is, why? Why do you think you need to have all these things in a person, right? And then the other side of that is, are you able to give those things, right? It's like you have this long list, right? Of, you know, 25 deep, but, you know, which of those can you give yourself to someone, right? And then my big thing is, why do you think you need to have someone who, I had a client who said, I love women with red hair. And I'm like, let's grow up, people. You know, you can dye your hair. Anybody can dye their hair red, right? If I don't have someone with red hair, I'm like, that's ridiculous, right? So it really is like, let's start with why you think you need all these things, right? I mean, and to me, our business is based on inner qualities. I would rather have someone who's kind and thoughtful and generous, who's loving and caring and supportive, than someone who's 6 foot tall, right, and gorgeous. Because at the end of the day, when all, you know, fails or starts to unravel, that person who's kind and thoughtful is the kind of person I want to see myself with, right? And I know that we can sit down and have a conversation and work through things. Whereas some person who's just in it for how they look, right, or how you look, you know, that's not going to last very long. I mean, that's just not sustainable. So it's like, to me, that's where I would start, is like, why do you think you need all this, right? And can you give some of this?
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
I think you just hinted at this, but what are some common patterns or behaviors on dates that you observe that hinder clients' dating success? I'm assuming like, well, that person had red hair, not brown hair, or blue eyes, not brown eyes, or might be one of them. But what are some other common patterns or behaviors that you might see that would hinder someone's dating success?
You know, the biggest thing I see in people, and this typically happens for people who are over 45, 50, right? The biggest thing I see is that no one's ever good enough, right? No one, it's kind of like your mom saying, oh, you know, no one's ever good enough for my son, you know, or my daughter. And that's what I see in people today. It's like, they always have a reason for why someone's not good enough. Oh, that person said something that like upset me. Oh, this person, you know, was shorter than I expected on the date, right? I told you they were 5'5", so I don't know what you were expecting. But there's always these little things that people are choosing to back out of a date or back out of a being able to date this person ongoing is because it's like things didn't line up exactly like I wanted them to, right? And so that's when I think expectations go wrong. It's like your expectations are not realistic in the sense that you're needing an out every time I put you on a date, right? And it's like, and there's nothing wrong with this person. Now, the other big thing that I see in people, right? And it's typically people over 50, is that they don't want to listen. It sounds crazy. Mm. But when you're coaching people as to like, you know, how to present yourself. And I always like to get my clients before they go on dates, like, let me tell you, you know, about this person so you know what to expect. And then they go in and they do exactly what I say not to do, right? And it's like, well, you know, I was having a conversation and I just didn't agree with this person. I'm like, you're there to have fun, right? You're there to, you know, enjoy the date. You're there to, you know, try to get along with this person. But if just because, you know, you don't like basketball, but they like basketball and you don't understand why anyone would want to, I mean, that's irrelevant when it comes to dating, right? It's like, we don't all have to be the same. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make, they confuse compatibilities with commonalities, right? Yeah. They're not the same things. We don't all have to bowl because I like bowling. We don't all have to read because I like reading. Those are things that you want, that you may want in common with someone, but that's not what compatibility is all about. And I think that's the biggest problem that people have with dating is that they don't know the difference between commonalities and incompatibilities. And then the other big thing, and I'll just say this, is that that word chemistry, right? People think that they have to have a spark right away. Like, oh, I didn't feel anything. I didn't sense anything. You know, and I'm like, look, people, you're 50 something years old. You may not have a spark on the first date, right? But that doesn't mean that this is not the right person for you. And these are the things to me that drive me crazy with people. It's like, there was no instant chemistry. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? How do you even know this person? You had a conversation, you went on a date, and you may have had a little fun, but how do you know if you're compatible with this person until you really get to know them more, right? And that these are the challenges that I have. And I'm going to just say this, that I'm going to blame dating apps for this, right? Mm-hmm. Dating apps and the choices that people have on dating apps is instant gratification that they're expecting to get. And they expect this to happen in real life, right? So if I don't see an instant chemistry with someone on a dating app, I'm just going to keep swiping, right? And people take that same mentality and concept into dating in real life and in real time, right? And these are the things that frustrate me with daters, especially older daters, because I think we're set in our ways to some degree, and we have these unrealistic expectations, and for no good reason. Let me just say that. No good reason.
I think what you've raised is really important. And I, as you were saying all this, I was like, wow, you need to have a lot of patience for your, like, for what you do, for sure. One of the things I talk about with my clients a lot is sometimes because of past trauma that we've had in childhood or beyond, when someone is actually healthy for us, it can feel boring.
Yeah.
And so people who are kind of recreating those patterns that are in their childhood of chaos or trauma will look for this, like what they call chemistry, that is actually them just repeating traumatic patterns. And so have many individual clients as well, not just couples, but let's say I have a single client who's starting to date. I'm like, just beware that you may feel like it's boring or like too calm, or you won't feel that like chemistry, and I'm making air quotes, but is it that, or is it like, is it just that you're seeking the chaos again?
And one of the things that I say to people, and I really am a big believer of this, I want a peaceful relationship. I don't want drama. I don't care about your ex. I mean, I want, you know, a drama-free, peaceful. And I say the same thing as Kathleen. I say, you know, it may seem boring, but let me tell you, I will take boring and peaceful every day of my life than having to deal with uncertainty, having to deal with toxic behavior and the back and forth of pulls that happen all the time. It is not fun. It is not exciting and it's not passionate. But people think that type of chemistry is sexy. It's fun. It's exciting. But it's also very toxic, and it's not a real relationship. This is why I like being a dating coach and a relationship coach, is because I get to talk about these kind of things, right? And then a lot of times what I hate to see in people is, even though they know the relationship is toxic, they want to hang in there and try to make it work, right?
Oh my gosh.
Which is not what you want to do, let me tell you.
I see that so much. I'm like, what? And I think this goes actually for all relationships, not just romantic or love relationships. Like, this can be all, like, really, Stoney and I talk about this a lot. How do you protect your peace? One of them is not repeating traumatic patterns of your past. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of trauma, you know, obviously my family situation is complicated. I have a podcast with my ex-sister-in-law. How do you balance when you're meeting somebody with having boundaries or sharing things slowly or being open and oversharing? And so I felt this too, where I wanted to get all the bad stuff out of the way. And so it's like, by the way, my parents are like this and this and this. It's not me. I have need to do it. And I didn't. I held back. But what do you think about the, is there such a thing as oversharing?
Yes, there is. You know, there's this information dump. And I see this, like, and I don't want to pick on Kathleen's profession, but I see this a lot when people come out of therapy. They feel like they just need to, like, be honest and open with people. So they start sharing all this information on a first and second day, and the other person is scared as heck, right? Because they're like, I didn't ask for all this. But people feel that they have to have this clarity and this honesty when they're dating. So it's like, oh, I was in this toxic relationship and all these things happen, and it's just too much, right? And so, yes, I talk about boundaries a lot with my clients, because, and it doesn't matter, like, if it's romantic or not. When you first meet someone, you have to have boundaries, right? You don't need to tell everybody everything about you. It's like, should I give them this information? I'm like, no, you don't know this person. Yeah. Why? You know, if people really want to know you, they can Google you, right? And they should. I say this all the time. Before people go on dates, like, we don't give all out information, but in general, right? When I'm giving, like, public information out, Google people before you go on a date with them, right? And I mean, find out about them, like, as much as you can. If that's what you need to, you know, to make you feel better about going on the date, that's fine. But the whole thing of information dumping, especially on a first or second date, is too much for people. That in itself can be traumatic. And I've seen it happen. And like I said, it normally happens for me, for people who, you know, they've done the work, they believe they're in a good place, and then they just want everybody else to know about it. But they're sharing this information way too soon. It's like, you don't know this person. What if you never go on a date with them again? Now you've told them your whole life story, and they don't need to know that about you, right? Let's be honest and open, but let's spoon feed a little bit. Let's like take our time, get to know people. Make sure this person is somebody that you want to share your personal information with, right? And I'll be very honest with you. Even in relationships, I'm a big believer that we all have past lives, right? I was married a long time. I'm not sharing everything about my marriage with my partner today. I don't think he needs to hear that, and I don't want to relive it, right? And so if I think it's something that makes sense for our relationship, I will share. But if it's something that, you know, is not going to make or break us, I'm not going to talk about it. And I don't think you have to. And people can scream at me about this, too. I believe that you should have secrets in your relationships, right? And those secrets are not the ones where, you know, there's a dead body under the whatever over here and over there kind of stuff. But you know, there should be secrets. Like, I don't have to tell people everything about me, right? Because it's not relevant to the relationship. And I think that's the problem with people. It's like they think, well, I'm good. I have nothing to hide. I'm good, too. And I have nothing to hide. But I don't think it's necessary. I mean, why are we sharing this? Right. You know, it doesn't make sense. Right.
Are there any rituals or practices you would recommend for people to feel more confident before a date?
Yeah. Yes. That's one of the things we talk about when we're date coaching people. We do virtual dates and we do in-person dates. What I say to people, even if you're doing a virtual date, make sure you're coming ready for the date, which means that you need to have your hair done, your nails done, all the things that you should do if you're going on an in-person date, right? And then the other big thing is body language, of course, right? You know, lean in, talk to someone. Even if it's in a virtual space, it's okay to lean in, right? And then I also believe that you have to be able to listen to people. There's this thing that we always hear. I hear you, you hear me, but you're not listening to me, right? And in our minds, I know in my mind, it's wired to want to like say something before someone finishes their sentence. I want to just like jump in and say something. So I've taught myself, you know, you've got to listen, like really listen to what the person is saying and then comment, right? It's kind of like dating apps. If you're on a dating app and you have so many people to scroll through, right? And you see something unique about someone, talk about them, right? Talk, you know, and you only get that by paying attention. It's the same thing with listening. You have to pay attention so that you can comment in a way to where it makes sense. It's kind of like the movie Hitch with Will Smith. Okay. You know, he was teaching the men how to date the women that they were interested in. And one of the big things was to listen, you know, listen to what she's saying. So later on, you can comment about that and she'll think, oh, he was really listening to me, right? And it really is a real thing because we all want to be heard. We all want to be seen for who we are and accepted for who we are, but we also want to be heard, right? And so, you know, I know that's like a long answer, but it's true. It's like there's these things that people can do easily that make a big difference with dating. And let me just say that a lot of people who use matchmakers, or at least the people who come to me, they're shy, you know, they're introverts. Mm-hmm. They haven't dated a lot. And being that we work a lot in the queer space, a lot of people haven't dated a lot, right? They don't have a lot of experience with dating. So that's why they come to us for date coaching to talk about, how do I communicate? How do I keep this person's interest online or in person? And so that's kind of that's a big thing for them, right? Is that they need to know how to date because they don't have a lot of experience. And these are people that are in their 30s. They're not people like, you know, younger people in their 20s. They're 30-year-olds who, you know, just don't have a lot of experience And they just need help as to how do I, you know, date effectively and make this work for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know we talked about commonalities versus compatibility. What are some parameters you're looking at when you're matching clients for compatibility?
The things that are very simple, right? Is someone kind? Is someone, you know, thoughtful? Is someone funny, right? Does someone have a sense of humor? Is someone financially stable? Someone who's secure in who they are, right? Those are the things to me that seem simple. Like, I want someone who's honest. I want someone who, you know, who makes me laugh. But those are really the things that make the big difference, right? And I said this before, I don't have to be a gym rat because you're a gym rat, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have to bowl because you bowl. And those are the differences between what we look for from the beginning is the qualities, right? What type of qualities are you looking for? People have, you know, especially in the hetero world, people have this idea. It's women. I'll say women have this idea. I want someone who's 6 foot. Well, the amount of men over 6 foot is very small, right? So that's not even a reality, right? And if I date someone who is, you know, 5'5", right? That person was not going to work for me because they're too short. Those things to me are not the most important factors when you're trying to determine long-term partnerships, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, it really is like, how can I find someone who gets me, who accepts me, who loves me for who I am? And even if I'm not having a great day, they're not ready to run off. Those are the things to me that are most important. And the differences between, you know, we both went to Harvard. Yeah, okay. But what does that really mean, right? Other than you both went to Harvard. And sometimes people come and say, I need someone who's Ivy League and all these things, right? And I'm like, okay. But to me, let's start with the inner qualities of a person, because that is sustainable versus, you know, one day I may not be able to, you know, zip line with you because I can't, right? Or I don't want to in my case because I'm afraid of heights. But and so that to me, those to me are the differences, right? Is that we always start with the inner qualities.
It's funny. I watched Later Daters on Netflix, and I don't know if you remember, there was this woman who the guy she wanted to date had to be a fan of her college football team.
Oh, I know.
Wow. It was like really specific. Yeah. Had to, because this is what she did every weekend. It was like an obsession. Had to be into it.
Yeah.
That seems like a tough one.
No, and it really is unrealistic, but that goes back to what I said before, these unrealistic mm-hmm. expectations of people. My partner is a World Series poker player. I'm not going to the poker house, right? It's not a place that I want to be. But do we go to Vegas a couple of times a year? Yes. I think you have to have real expectations, right? And we don't think that, you know, just because someone else likes something, like he loves it. This is his life, he's in the working, his real job. But I support that for him. But he knows I'm not going with you every week because I don't have to. That's not my thing. And I think that's the difference. It's like you're finding outs, easy outs, by having these unrealistic expectations, right? And that's not necessary, because whether or not he loses or wins at poker each week, I don't care. You know what I mean? What I care about is the love and the kindness and the support that I get from him, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what's important to me. And that he takes out the trash. I'm just kidding.
What are your thoughts, Daphne, on the impact of dating apps on relationships?
Let me say this, because dating apps have been around a long, long time, right? And I'm in Dallas, and Match.com is here. And it's one of those things that I think if you use dating apps a long, long time ago and found your person, you're probably going to be more successful, right? And I believe that you have to be very aware of who you are and how you are on dating apps, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to be successful. But I also think that with the amount of dating apps and the amount of time that people spend on dating apps trying to find real people, because that's the biggest problem that I hear. I don't know if this is a real person or not. And the other problem is, you know, I was talking to this person and they ghosted me. Like, I didn't even say anything and they ghosted me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, to me, dating apps can be very damaging to people's mental health and physical health to some, and emotional health to some degree. Because after a little bit, the amount of rejection that people feel, right, over and over and over is very damaging. And it may not seem like a big deal for the other person on the other end, right? To just say, okay, I'm done. I was one of those people on dating apps, and we also used to spend time with our clients on dating apps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that if you're not interested in someone, right? You've been talking to them for a couple of days. Just say, you know what? It's been nice. I appreciate the conversation. I just don't think it's a good match for me, and move on. Whether or not they read that or not is irrelevant. But I think that's the kind of approach you should have with dating apps. And if you can't be that person on a dating app, you probably shouldn't be. But if you're also too sensitive and too fragile, I'll use that word, right? To be on dating apps, then you shouldn't be on them either, right? Because I do think that they can be very harsh. And we've seen them, especially in this career space that we're in. People are very harsh, right? And, and I'll just say something too for... when we were in the pandemic, right, I spent a lot of time on dating apps, doing a lot of research of a lot of different dating apps, right, so that I can help my clients and so that I can have firsthand knowledge of how dating apps work, right? And back in the pandemic, there were all these people on dating apps, right, because there was nowhere to go. And people felt compelled to be mean and harsh and say some of the most horrible things, right? Because they were in the small little box and no one's monitoring them, so to speak. Now things are a lot better, right? There's more securities in place across the dating apps, but they're still not my first way of meeting people. I know you can meet millions of people. And the bigger problem I have with dating apps is there's too many of them. And it's like, how do you know which one to choose that's going to be good for you? I say don't choose any of them, because now that we can be out and about, we should do that. There's too many other ways to meet people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you help people transition, even your clients, from, you know, a virtual date or online or chatting to in-person meetings?
Yeah, I have a whole process around that, where if you're on a dating app, you meet someone, like you chat for a couple of days. And then I say to people, take it offline, pick up the phone, talk to them, or do a FaceTime or a virtual call, right? I don't recommend people give their phone numbers out. So you can do a lot of that stuff in the apps these days. But I do say, find a way to like have a phone conversation. I really think it's very important for people to hear people's voices. Because sometimes when you hear people's voices, like I heard one yesterday, you know, it was a pleasant voice, but it wasn't what I was expecting. And sometimes you get that, oh, this voice is so annoying. I could never like listen to this person all the time. Or this person talks too fast, right? Or this person just sounds like they're BSing me, right? And so I would say chat for a couple of days, pick up the phone, have a conversation. Stay away from texting because it's really toxic. And then within a week span, try to set up an in-person date. I don't recommend people set up an in-person date the same day, because that gives me hookup mentality, right? Or maybe like two or three days later. But it should be within a week span. I don't think that you should go 2 or 3 weeks chatting with someone online before you go on a date with them. I don't think it's necessary. Because like I said, you could go, once you get their information, Google them. Find out as much as you can about this person. And then decide if you want to go on a date with them. Now, I'm a big proponent of background checks. One would say you shouldn't say that, but we do background checks on everybody that we work with. And so if you're not sure, do a background check. There's all these agencies out there and you don't even need social security numbers anymore. So you can get as much information about someone and have an agency do a background check on them.
I am very good. I think it's my like, I think it's like part of my, I'll be like, give me the name.
Exactly.
Really weird.
I know it's very weird. I am able to find anything. But what I love about this is that it's like an added service that you like when you're doing a matchmaking service, because I don't know necessarily if I would, I mean, I'm in a committed relationship, so I'm not speaking about myself particularly, but if I was on an online dating app and I was meeting people, I can't say that I would be doing a background check for everyone I went out with, But knowing that you're a matchmaking service, you've already done those background checks, is like a beautiful peace of mind for sure.
Yeah. Now that's one of the things I'm very big on is we have to do background checks, and we have all of our clients and members sign a contract which has a confidentiality clause in there, right? So it's very important because the demographic of people that we work with is to keep them as safe as possible, right? And to keep people's information private, that's what, to me, one of the benefits of working with a matchmaker, right? The other benefit is that we're vetting people in a way to where we already are finding people for who you're looking for and what you're looking for. And we have an 85% guarantee of compatibility with all of our matchmaking packages, right? So that makes a big difference. You know, to your point about Seema, it's like Auntie Seema is like, you know, you can at least get 80% of what you want. And in this case, what we're saying is from the beginning, I'm going to bring you someone who's 85% compatible with what you're looking for and who you're looking for.
For sure. I love that. Yeah. So we're going to be wrapping up soon, Daphne, but what are some of the red flags that people need to be aware of in early dating?
You know, and it's not just dating. Love bombing drives me nuts, right? It's the thing that people think, this person is like showing so much interest. And I'm like, oh my God, love bombing is real, right? And it doesn't have to be about romance. It could be about, I just want you to see that I'm interested in you, right? And so I'm going to, you know, do all these things, say all these things that sound so good, right? That make you feel like I'm so interested in you. And so I would say the biggest red flag to me is love bombing. And then the other one is mirroring, which is a form of love bombing for me, is that people say, you know, exactly what you want to hear, right? So I tell my clients this, don't tell the person everything about you. Like, ask these open-ended questions and expect them to do the same. Because if you say, I like going to the movies, they're going to say, I do too. I once dated this person. We were dating for a little bit. And he came and said to me, I don't think we're compatible. I was like, what are you talking about? And what had happened is that he said, you know, I was just going along with you because I wanted to date you. I wanted to be in a relationship with you. So I just did everything you wanted to do for that reason. And I thought, oh my God, these are like real life experiences, right? That I can share with other people. But that is real. People sometimes, they find someone attractive or interesting, and it's like they will say whatever it takes to get you to date them or to be in a relationship with them, right? So I would say those things are things you want to watch out for. The typical lying and stuff is like, it's going to happen no matter what, right?
What's interesting is love bombing can be a sign of codependency, which is a problem. It can be a sign of avoidant attachment style, and it can be a sign of narcissistic personality traits.
Cool.
So any of those are, the least is like the avoidant attachment style. I mean, it's an attachment style, but that happens where they love bomb and then they take away the love. But codependency too, is, we did an episode on this recently. So they're all problematic, right? So love bombing, I think, is a good red flag because it covers a few things actually.
Yeah. And narcissistic behavior and, you know, avoidant attachment style, you know, those two things go well together, right? Because you're right. It's like they come in, they say all these wonderful things, right? And then they start playing these mind games with you and start playing with your emotions, right? And it really is sad. And then you have this very unhealthy, this person one day is great and this person, and then the next day they're not, right? And it's because that type of relationship is what they thrive on. I like the push and the pull, the negative and the positive. We can continue to stay in this bond together, you know, this very unhealthy bond based on that, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, Daphne, thank you so, so much for coming on with us today and chatting. I learned a lot, and I can certainly say if I did not have a partner, I would use a matchmaking service, likely yours. So thank you. Thank you so much for all the information you provided.
You're welcome. And let me say, we work with people all across the country and in Canada. And so, yes, Canada is one of the places that we love. And unfortunately, you know, we're in a love-hate relationship right now because I'm in the U.S.
But you guys still love us.
Yeah, no, we love you, but yeah, but I'm not sure that you know Canada loves me right now.
We love you too. Me talking about you won't even come visit me.
Not because of you. I love you. And I miss the US, but unfortunately it doesn't feel so safe to go there right now. So thank you so much, Daphne, for coming on. And thank you all for listening to Sisters in Sobriety. And we will see you next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.